Okay, let's get started. We have a couple of people with us who have not been here in the last couple of weeks. Let me remind you, we're going through lists out of the Bible. The list we're going through is three parts. We're in the second of those parts called the fruit of the Spirit out of Galatians 5. And we are looking this morning at the word meekness. The point of view that we're taking is a point of view that emerges out of a comment that Jesus made in the Sermon on the Mount about there being a broad way that lots of people find, but it leads to death, a narrow way that leads to life, but only a few people find it. The picture of a narrow way is a path along which it's possible to fall off to the right or to the left, to one side or the other. And so there's a workbook called The Mind of Christ prepared by a guy named T.W. Hunt with a partnership of Claude King. And in that book, he takes the point of view that there are characteristics of Jesus that the Spirit wants to develop in us, and that these are some of the characteristics in these lists that we see, that Satan is going to try to pull us from whatever that characteristic is to its opposite. If he's not successful in doing that, then his next tactic is to try to push us past that into some perversion of that characteristic. And so we've been examining these terms one by one. When we finish with this list, we've got one more to go, we're probably going to do the last of these three sets of words or terms or phrases in a slightly different way than we've been doing this. Okay? Has someone looked up Matthew 11:29? Does somebody have that in front of them right now? Does somebody else have Numbers 12:3 in front of them? Or could you get it in front of you? And two or three others get Psalm 25:9, Psalm 37:11, Psalm 149:4. If you get those in front of you, this may be a good way to start out today. Okay, if somebody has Matthew 11, if you would read that one.
Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you shall find rest on your shoulders.
This translation says gentle and humble. In the King James, it says meek. Okay? So Jesus is describing himself as gentle and humble. So we might put those terms down. Okay. Numbers 12:3. Yeah. Trey, do you have that?
Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who were on the face of the earth.
Do you think of Moses as being meek?
No.
King James translation uses that word. He was the meekest man, more so than anyone else who had been on earth. So here is Jesus described by this word, and here is Moses described by this word. Notice in this translation, you repeat the word humble. You said yours has patience.
I think he means waiting on the Lord, being dependent on the Lord, in this case, the meekness, because he was a leader. Moses certainly was a leader. I don't know how to express it, but he recognized his position as far as God is concerned.
Dependent on the Lord and recognized his position.
Relationship.
Bill, I have a note in here that I've written from another study, and it's I put down meek instead of humble, and I have here accepting all as from God.
Yes, accepting all as from God. Do you remember what Job said at one point when his wife was suggesting that the best course of action in all the troubles he had was just to curse God and die? Remember what Job said? We accept good things from the Lord's hands. Must we not accept hard things, evil things as well? Let's go to the middle of the Psalm 37:11. Does somebody have that one? King James says the meek will inherit the earth and enjoy great peace yourself. Okay. Psalm 149:4. Let's do that one. Again, you're probably going to hear the word humble or gentle more often in these newer translations than you will the word meek.
Psalm 1. The Lord takes delight in his people and crowns the humble with salvation.
He will beautify, one translation says, the meek with salvation. I like that turn of phrase. Now, Psalm 25:9. Somebody have that?
He guides the humble
or the meek in what is right. My translation says in judgment, but I like yours better. And he will teach those his ways. Okay? So, let's keep going a step or two further. What are some synonyms for meekness? We've got a few up here. Are there any others we ought to add? Gentle and humble, patient, dependent on the Lord. Let me give you a little clue here. In all the others so far, just about, what T.W. Hunt has listed in his workbook is a single word, a single word, a single word, a single word. You get to this one, and it's phrase and phrase and phrase. In fact, when I looked at my notes, I thought, wait a minute, I forgot to write these things down because I had forgotten that particular piece. I've just checked and I do have. He's got a lot fewer things, and what he has is several words, phrases of things. And I think it's the same sort of thing that Caroline was expressing just a moment ago. It's hard to express exactly what it means. One word isn't going to do it. Okay? This actually comes pretty close. Dependent on the Lord, recognizing his position with respect to the Lord. Okay? Are there other phrases that you can think of or that come to mind? If you can begin to see this, okay? I heard somebody describe one time that meekness is power under control. Harnessed power. It isn't doormat. And it isn't milquetoast. It is not that at all. Otherwise, that description of Jesus and of Moses as being described by that term, That wouldn't work.
Bill.
Yes.
I don't know if in this list, meek is the same word as blessed or the meek, you know, in the Beatitudes, but I can remember studying that someone said that word for meek was what they would use, like when they would train their own horses, and that they kind of translated it, capable of being trained.
Yeah, and I've heard that same thing too, and I was going to bring that out if nobody else did. The word that I heard, I'm going to use your phrase as well. I had heard not gentle, but gentled. Gentled. Right. And then tell me again your phrase.
Capable of being trained.
Capable of being trained.
And I remember they said they would take wild horses and they would try to train them and try to train them. As a final test, they would put them all herded together and they would sound a trumpet, and they had trained them that when they heard that, this particular signal, they would be still or something. Mm-hmm. So it stopped. And so when they sounded it, those who would rush ahead, they were not trained, and so they were not meek.
They sound the trumpet halfway down the hill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those that stopped.
Right.
So the ones that they would continue working with.
Yeah, that was good.
Interesting. I know that I heard a very interesting thing. If you go to India, There's people riding on elephants and using elephants as work animals. You go to Africa, you don't see that. The African elephants are not trainable in that same way. They don't submit to that kind of human leadership. At least I was told that.
Submitted
to God, because you said the word submit, and that's submitted to God.
Submitting.
I've been reading some books about not my heritage, but the heritage of the land where I grew up a long time before my people came there. There's a book called Trail of Tears about the Cherokee. And I'm reading more recently a novel. Some of you know the novel Cold Mountain. There's a newer novel. It's not a sequel in any sense because the stories don't connect. But there's another novel by that same author called 13 Moons. And both of these cover the history of the Cherokee people. If you're going to read 13 Moons, try to read Trail of Tears first. It'll make a lot of stuff in 13 Moons make a lot more sense. But there's a comment by one of the characters in 13 Moons that he talks about the change in the animal population in the mountains where the Cherokee were. And he says, used to be there were animals there that weren't domesticated. And it wasn't the thought of taking a mountain lion or the thought of taking some other animal and sort of harvesting its wool like they did with sheep. They said, you know, the sheep and the cattle are placid. And these others were wild. So, you know, somewhere in between that is the horses. There's still the power, but the power comes under control. Okay? Anything else?
Well, Hunt's the long one that he gives, accepting God's dealings with us as good and resistant.
Mm-hmm. And I thought this came pretty close in here to saying that, but Hunt does say it that way. Those of you who want to take this down, accepting God's dealings with us as good, that's, I think, an echo of Job's comments. If we take good things from the Lord's hands, must we not take hard things as well? Accepting God's dealings with us as good without resistance. And then he adds, humble before men and lowly before God. And I think those two phrases were going together. Humble before men, lowly before God. And then I think he tosses in this phrase that it's a fruit of power, but I don't know exactly how that fit in, so I put it in quotes and sort of left it alone. What are opposites for this?
Proud.
Proud or pride? Stubborn.
Arrogant.
Uh-huh. And again, one could say arrogance. Stubborn, arrogant, or arrogance. What else?
Easily offended.
Well, that's a good one. Easily offended. Yeah. He puts two words down. One is haughtiness, which I challenge you to spell. And cockiness. Arrogance and cockiness. Egotism, vanity, conceit. Narcissistic. There is a song. Carole King, I think, had an album called Tapestry where she covered this song. You know what covering a song means? I mean, somebody else put it out first, and then you sing it on yours, and you make more money than they ever thought of making. That's covering. I don't believe she was the originator of it, but the song had this phrase in it: "You're so vain. You're so vain." You probably think this song is about you. And if you're old enough to remember that song, I think that captures some of the spirit of this. Check yourself out in the mirror whenever you walk into a room. Okay? What are the...
Satan's going to try to pull you here. He's not successful. Where's he going to take you? What's the perversion that you come from this?
Overload of being pushed around.
Yeah.
Doormat.
And I think milk has a Q-U-E, is that right? I think it's spelled that way.
Yeah, it is.
I think that's the way one spells milk toast. I don't think it's what you say. I don't think it's what you say. But if you insist on it, I'll... Okay. P.W. Hunt puts down this one. Not quite in that form, but I can remember 15 years ago as things were changing at the university, one of the fellows who was about to retire said they needed a new flag to go over the university campus that said "Wimps Rule." It was a comment on the day, and he was actually fairly right. Spineless is another word. Spineless is another word that he puts down. He calls these wimpiness or wimpy and spinelessness, but that's really what he's talking about. And then he uses one which is perhaps not as drastic as these. Timid or timidity. And then uses cowardly. If you get a sense, these are avoiding conflict at all costs. These are trying to move conflict into a more constructive context. These over here are initiating conflict. That's at least one way to watch for this.
So depending, possibly my being dependent, I'm not mean it in a good sense, so dependent on God, but almost can't even make a decision without even indecisive something. I don't know what the word I want.
Weakness?
Yeah, weakness.
Indecisive to the extreme.
To the extreme, yeah. That's what I mean.
Maybe catches it. Again, I think T.W. Hunt's right. This is not one that you catch with one word. This is not one you catch with one word. Okay.
Still?
Yeah.
Possibly watery clay that anybody can stay in shape if it's constantly molded, always and never in
no form at all.
Yeah.
It's the shape of whatever's around. Chameleon.
Yeah. So on this side you have conforming to the world. And on this side, you have conforming to God's leadership. There should be an R in there. I think this is one that if you just take the word conforming, it's gonna land on a divide between these two. Because I think God calls on us to be pliable. But so does the world, and one of those is not so good, and one of those is very good.
It's like political correctness.
I don't see the place for putting it, but mentioning it, I think, is fair. Yeah. I think some of these things are responses.
That wraps around to the other
side. PC, yeah, responsiveness. The imposition of PC real here, the responsiveness, and trying to find some middle ground. That picture of narrow way is a pretty strong picture that I think is better than we know as we look at these things. Now, where do we go with this to find some term that can help? Some way of thinking about this that can help. And I take you back especially Somehow these pastels just don't work for me.
It's a little bit more green, or at least it claims to be.
I take you back to this comment that Moses was the meekest of men, meeker than all the men on earth. Is that the way you look at Moses? Not in the typical way that you think of the word meek as sort of a synonym for some of these terms over here. There's something else being talked about. And so what I want to do is I want to try to explore with you a little bit what that might mean, and maybe use an example or two from things that have happened around me in the last month or so. Yeah, John.
Well, what do you think of Moses at the beginning? Just because he just couldn't see where he could be used without, which is, I think it's
July 29. Do you have this on your calendar yet?
July
29. Do you have an entry on there? I know you have the date on your calendar. Smart up. Every year for the past several years, Paul has put together a concert program for Sunday nights in July. Okay? There's a fellow scheduled to come on July 29th. All right? Make your plans. Get here early to get a seat. Guy's Ken Miedema. And there is a song of his about Moses that I think captures Moses' call more clearly than almost anything. And so I think, John, you're right that early on Moses struggled a bit with seeing things, and Ken Miedema's song, I think, catches that. But there was a change that came out of that, and he was a different person. Paul might be described by these words, although I don't see him described that way by the writers in Acts very often. But I think there was in Paul a lot of this early on. And as a result of his conversion experience, what emerged out of the confusion of, well, I thought it was this way, and I thought my approach was right. My approach was tragically, horribly, terribly wrong. So what is the right approach? And I see him sort of swinging between the nature of his character, which I think would tend to put him here, and he'd have to fight against that, and some of this. There is in his correction sometimes of gentleness. And I think that may be the key. So that's where I want to go with you. I want to propose that one way to think about this is to think about a word that you might call correctable. I want you to try that word on for size. And notice here, conforming to God's leadership, submitting to God, accepting things as coming from God, dependent on the Lord, recognizing His position in relationship to the Lord. I think all of these are tied into this. But the question is this. When you, in your life, have been corrected, what was your response? Let's make it easy. When people are corrected, what typically are the characteristics of their response? Okay. I heard defensive, and I heard offended, and I heard something totally different.
Defensive.
Denial. I think I'm going to put that over here. Can everybody see why?
Yes. When you're accused of something or whatever, instead of accepting it, and I saw this on TV the other day, you immediately say to that person, well, you place the blame back on that person instead of accepting it. You're right. I don't say that. In other words, if you tell me I'm doing something wrong, I say, well, you do it too.
There's nobody going to be able to read that. I was trying to write projecting. Yeah, returning blame to the criticizer.
Well, it depends on how the criticizer tells you, too. Don't you think it makes a difference, too? Depends on how
Yeah. But I think there's some people that members react the same way all the time.
How do people respond? I don't think you have enough detail up here yet, but I think you've made a great start.
Never with Thanksgiving. My friend Laura says, anger. I think that's a big one. Okay?
You were telling me that.
Mm-hmm. Tell me. I'm rich. Okay? So, at levels above offended, you get the anger, you get the outrage.
There's
not much over there, is there?
Withdrawal.
Okay. We just hit a third category.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes we get desperate, too.
Or me.
Yeah.
Desperate.
Because I know if someone's in front of something.
I never know how many E's and how many A's there are in desperate. I've worked for years in
desperate. I'm sorry.
Three E's.
But you're desperate, aren't you?
I'm going to put that one on the borderline between these two categories. Because I think it can tip one way or the other right now. You ever been in a position of criticizing somebody and watched how they responded? Maybe you can turn with that right now.
I need your little plaque up there stepping on nameless ground. An example of exactly what we're talking about. It took place in here a little earlier. As I gave the profiles back to the individual and said, please read them and make sure that elephant information is correct. Now, some information could be incorrect or erroneous because maybe I made an error. But some of it could have been because you gave me an error. There were people who did not put everything there, and then they changed some of it, and then they're saying, and that should be. So that's a prime example. No offense intended.
There's more than one way to ask for clarification. What do you mean?
What are you talking about?
And I would suggest apology probably follows kitsiv rather than necessarily emerges immediately. But there may be an order to some of this. Yeah, well.
I said a minute ago embarrassment, and I think embarrassment brings on a lot of the other things out there. Mm-hmm. Because we don't want to accept the fact that they're wrong.
Doesn't have any R's. Can you feel embarrassment as representing a tipping point? Mm-hmm. That one can fall one way from that and one can fall another way from that. Right.
I think it's interesting to watch the young people on American Idol there. There are millions of people with the sound of cowboys.
You watch American Idol?
and the ones that are mature will be pensive and say thank you. They'll really think about it. And then some of them you'll see just get
that's one of the reasons I think that show is popular, is that, there's pretty raw humanity is put on display, especially in those early weeks. That's always been for me more fun. Yeah.
And if this is where you're ungood.
Yeah.
Becky.
I think over is desperate.
and I see women do this far more than men, but they play the victim role. I mean, it's not, my fault, but it is the women out here, and we have so many women without the men. But they like to put up with the men.
I'd be sorry twice. Sometimes people can
look
sorry.
We've got apology, which may cover that.
The question would be, would the apology be accepted?
Yes. I want to expand anger. Would you let me do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If the response is anger, at whom is the anger addressed? Mm-hmm. I do believe this is a complicated step.
The bearer of the message.
Okay, the anger could be addressed at the person providing the criticism or the correction. It could be addressed at yourself. One of those could push you over here. One of those could push you over here. I do believe there's another position in which the anger is addressed. And I only know this because I've watched it four times in the last month. Anger at the circumstances, anger at society, absolutely, but there's a huge one. Have you ever been in a position to provide what I will euphemistically call constructive criticism to someone? Have you seen anger? Good. Is there any place that anger is directed other than at you or at the circumstances or at self? Is there any other place? Maybe. But there's another big one.
Well, my kids always blame their siblings.
That's right.
You got to say more before you get the gold star that I've got.
Well, other people, you know.
Yeah, but what are they blaming them for?
The devil
blaming God or Satan.
Who told you about this? How do you know? Have you seen that one? Have you seen that one? And I found the response, I'm omniscient. I know all. It doesn't work. Because they know better. There's anger directed at the person providing the correction. There's also anger directed at the person who revealed that there was something to correct. And that is more insidious. That's real insidious. There's a problem that needs to be corrected. And there's a person in charge who has to provide that correction. And for the last 18 months where I work, that's been me. And you start providing that correction, and the response you get is not a pensive thought of, let me consider what I have been doing and how that might have led to this moment. It has been instead, who told you? And the anger that's there is deep, and it is community renting. Community does not hold up with that question. Community does not hold up. If community is in the balance, the temptation is not to provide correction, because that might hurt community. Those of you who've been in this position know that's not a solution. Not for the long term. Here's what I wrote down. I think this word hinges for our day as much as anything on the word correctable. And the question is, what is your reaction when corrected? Is it anger at the one offering correction? Is it anger at the one who informed the one offering the correction? Or is it quiet consideration of what you've done and what is the change the correction calls for?
I think it also has a lot to do with how you approach the question. Are you unique yourself when you
can
go
you now,
to confront?
Yeah. Can you now look back at Moses and Jesus through that lens and recognize the responsiveness that Moses had to God's correction for him and how he provided correction for his people and see that all of a single feature or a single character. And I do not lay myself out as the equivalent of Moses. I think it's absolutely fair game to ask how his correction offered.
I think it depends on who's going to get back to you.
I think it depends on whether those people are correctable. If you have somebody who stands in that column over there, arrogant, proud, stubborn, and so forth, and they try to provide correction, it's probably going to be a little harder. If you got somebody who stands over here, it's probably not going to work. What I'm trying to say is, I see a double relationship hiding in this one. What is my attitude toward God? And then out of that, what is my attitude toward others? Am I responsive to their correction of me? Am I gentle as I provide correction to them? If I'm gentle with them, it's probably because God has taught me how to be gentle. And maybe that's taken and maybe that hasn't taken.
Are you caring, gentle, in that you offer advice or correction to an individual and then you do it again?
When you learn about deliberate disobedience and deliberate rebellion, that becomes a very hard question. That becomes a very hard question. And I will tell you again, one that I've been dealing with for the last couple of months. Very interesting. Yeah. Now, I don't know if I can make this all work, but I want to take you back, if you will, for just a moment, to Matthew 11:29. What did it say? Jesus says, take my... I always find myself letting an L roll into that word yoke. I can remember when I was real young hearing this and thinking it had something to do with eggs and it not made any sense at all. Okay? What is a yoke? It is a confining piece of apparatus to allow what? To allow the power of the animal to be harnessed, controlled, and directed. And what does Jesus say of his yoke? Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly of heart. But in another place, he talks about that same yoke. And what does he say? It's light, easy. I think he says, my yoke is easy, my burden is light.
The very next verse right there.
Right.
And you shall find rest for your soul. Uh-huh.
If I know how to be in harness, I can sometimes help somebody else figure out how to work in harness. And power is always better directed in that sense. You understand what I'm trying to say? This is tough. But I want to take you to Galatians chapter 6. Take you to Galatians chapter 6. We're almost through. Galatians chapter 5 verse 1 says, Christ set us free so we should remain free. Stand firm then and do not let yourselves be fastened again to the yoke of slavery. But then in verse 13 of chapter 5, he says, we were called to be free, but don't let your freedom be an opening for self-indulgence, but be servants to one another in love. The whole of the law is summarized in one commandment, love your neighbors yourselves. If you go on snapping at one another and tearing one another to pieces, take care, you'll be eaten up by one another. Now come down to chapter 6, verse 1. Brothers, even if one of you is caught doing something wrong, those of you who are spiritual should set that person right in a spirit of, King James says, meekness. This translation says gentleness. And watch yourselves that you're not put to test in the same way. Anyone offering correction ought to recognize they could potentially be in the same situation as the person being corrected. It changes your attitude completely if you do that. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Correct others as you would have others correct you is maybe a paraphrase that you can do this. Now, I want you to watch how verse 2, 3, 4, and 5 play out. And we'll be finished. Carry each other's burdens. This is how you keep the law of Christ. Let me repeat that. Carry each other's burdens. That's how you keep the law of Christ.
Someone who thinks himself important when he's not only deceives himself, but everyone is to examine his own achievements, and then he will confine his boasting to his own achievements, not comparing them with anybody else's. The root of the problems I face where I work is hiding right there. As soon as my folks start comparing themselves to other folks, everything starts to collapse. If they keep an eye on what they're supposed to be doing and how they're doing that, everything gets better. It's taken a long time to see that. Now, look at verse 5. Each one has his own load to carry. There's an internal contradiction that is erased by this. This is, if you know what the word oxymoron means, it's a truth, but it sounds like it's contradicting itself. Verse 2, carry each other's burdens. Verse 5, each one has his own load to carry. If I focus on the load I'm carrying, but I'm aware of load you have and try to help you, that becomes very different from when I try to push my load off on you and then criticize you for how you carry everything you've got. Somehow community finds itself in between these two. Everybody's got their own burdens to carry, but we're all supposed to help. If you've been in community, I think you know that that works. And more than anything, that's what our church is called to be.
Verse 2 could refer to a big burden. I need help.
Could be.
Verse 5 could refer to little burdens. I've got little burdens, but I'm able to handle them.
But
would you help me from the big ones?
Could be. Psalm 37:11. What did you say? There's going to come a day when people of this sort are the ones who will inhabit the earth. The inheritance that God's people have is an inheritance that comes to those who are teachable, trainable, controllable, and who have these kinds of responses to correction. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we see this word used of two of the greatest people the Bible has to talk about, Jesus the greatest, and Moses the one you said is leading your people as you would lead them. And in both cases, the Bible tells us that they were meek and humble and gentle. Teach us how to do that while still having a spine. Teach us how to do that while still having standards. Gently helping others to join us on the road. Gently working with others as we would want them working with us. And help us understand that when we face times of correction, it's for our good, if that correction comes from you. All this we pray in your Son's name. Amen.